C2A. Number 10A.
We finished together the tone of principle by going through the text and seeing the layout of it through the 7 subtones. And perhaps we can recapitulate it again and see what that 4th main subject implies. We have seen that the whole tone of it is that if we start out with prayer and begin to get into unity with the nature of God, therefore with principle, that then Atonement and Eucharist will say that if I'm one with principle, that then the Christ principle comes to me and gives to me that which is of the nature of principle, namely the power of demonstration, spiritual power. So if we want to know how to gather within ourselves spiritual power, we know the way now. It goes from the 4th subject of prayer to the 4th subject of Atonement and Eucharist, wherein we see that not I have to have spiritual power, but that God is the power in the messianic work, that actually principle translates itself as the Christ to me and awakens in me spiritual power. This is the fundamental tone, and if I ask which steps are necessary in order that I can develop that spiritual power, then the subtones will tell me something about it. What did mind say? Mind said, in order that you really get spiritual power and the power of demonstration, you have to go back to the revelation of mind as laid down and dictated in the Bible or in the textbook, as laid down in its original sense, really, in a revealed text. Don't go to any other source in order to find your information of mind. Go to the source, that which divine mind dictated. And so within myself I know that if I want to understand the text of the textbook, I will have to approach it with the mind of Christ and to see that I have the same mind that God is, and that God is no other mind than that mind which is within me. And so I go right out from the sense of being one with mind, and with that mind I begin to study and to investigate the text, to listen to the text, and that text gives me the right interpretation. Which leads me at once to the subtone of spirit, which says, therefore only the spiritual interpretation of the text gives me an answer that will really lead somewhere, that is really bringing me into a new consciousness, into the newness of life. If I do the very opposite, and if I believe people, therefore if I believe theology, if I believe spiritualism, then they will interpret to me the same original text in a materialistic, ritualistic way, so that they can prove everything what they want to prove according to their own human set of thinking. So I have to be aware that I'm not falling back to a false source, to a false principle, but that I actually stay in the tone of principle as mind and see that is a spiritual principle and that will speak to me in a spiritual way and will unfold in me a new sense, a new idea, the newness of life. But if I see that and I can see that I are not allowed to bear within me anything that is not like principle, and I come to the tone of soul, where everything within me must be of the same nature as soul or as principle, that it must be identical with that principle, so I can see that I must really sacrifice and give up everything that is not of the nature of principle. Therefore, it's not enough to believe that Jesus as a person has taken away the sins for me. I have to give my own sacrifice. Mrs. Eddy speaks about the spiritual sacrifice that is necessary, namely that I demonstrate factually that I want to get rid of sin. And so she speaks about that we have to cleanse ourselves of sin, or else we can never enter into that unity with principle which gives me spiritual power. Then I'm still staying in a theological realm, and that has no power. So the blood of Jesus has no power. But the same sacrifice where I see that if I lay actually down a false sense of life, that cleanses me, makes me free from everything that is unlike God, and therefore gives room for spiritual power. When I see that, then everything is cleansed out of my consciousness that would stand in the way of principle, so that I can see that in the measure as I am obedient to that principle, in the measure that I really accept the subtone of mind, spirit, and soul, and be obedient to that, that obedience to principle gives me the power of demonstration. So at that point, Mrs. Eddy tells over two paragraphs how really Jesus, through his obedience, was demonstrating God, and that we too, by being obedient to the principle laid down, we demonstrate God. And always think that we say obedience to principle, that this is not just obedience to a term called principle. That principle is always mind, spirit, soul being really activated and practiced. So that obedience to principle as mind, principle as spirit, principle as soul is actually being obedient and obeying the commandments, and that triggers off within me the power of demonstration. Then, when we know that, then that leads us into the newness of life. That then really triggers off that we are going to demonstrate that life by drinking the cup, as she says, we go the way of life by drinking the cup of sorrowful effort, which means I have to prove that principle as principle in my life experience, that I must prove that and practice that in the everyday life, and only in that way can I find out if I have a good foundation, if I have a divine foundation or not. Because right before that, she has said that big sentence that the divinity of the Christ must be made manifest in the humanity of Jesus, or the humanity of us, and that is the experience of life. So that life then comes in and says, I use that method in every situation, apply it in every situation, and that brings me further. If I do that, if I really am willing to apply constantly the subtones of mind, spirit, soul as a principle in my life, then I am a new man, and I come to truth. Then that consciousness of the first five sub-subtones is then the Christ to me, and that Christ is bringing forth a new man, manifests really the Christ as giving me divine authority, dominion. And we feel within ourselves that terrific power taking place where we can speak with authority. And that naturally brings us to the last point that says, yes, and in the measure that I do that, and in the measure I feel within myself that authority, then I feel that this can be the blessing for the whole world, it come to love, to the universal sense, for the whole world, then it is demonstrating Christianity. It is demonstrating that, what Mrs. Eddy said, that God is the power in the messianic work. And I feel a great sense of fulfilled demonstration. I only feel a fulfilled demonstration when principle proves itself universally, and not just individually in my own experience, but where I feel that that is something that applies to the whole world, that it is a universal idea, and therefore ushers in really the true sense of Christianity. That's how you run through those subtones in your mind, you build up something what means to be in unity with principle. So that thought of being in unity with principle are not just a few terms, but that we can enlarge it by taking in the various aspects of that through the seven subtones, and thereby feel more and more the spirit of the letter, the atmosphere, the divine atmosphere of that letter, and little by little it begins to become, that it becomes a spiritual atmosphere within me, a spiritual tonality within me, which stays, which is not something that I have constantly to re-establish in my consciousness, to rebuild in my consciousness, but that it stays within my consciousness as an established tonality of the world as I see it here at the point of principle. When we have seen this, that God really is the power of the messianic work, that then we come further to a fifth subject, which says, well, then that principle could actually really establish the new life, a new sense of life. And we come to the fifth subject, our main epitome is there, that through man's unity with life, which is God, we lay down the material concept of life, and thereby free ourselves from the belief of persecution. We get there also a sense of the newness of life, of being exalted in life and having an exalted sense of life. Now, when we read this main epitome at this point, that through man's unity with life we lay down the material concept of life, so you will say to yourself, but that we have had already before, that we constantly were speaking about laying down the mortal concept of life. And this is true, absolutely true, that we had that in the tone of mind, in the main tone of spirit, in the main tone of soul, in the main tone of principle, because we will see, therefore I didn't touch on this subject before, because we'll see that actually the subtones always reflect the main tone. So when we were doing mind or spirit or soul of principle and we came to the subtone of life, he always had a sense that that main tone could only really be demonstrated fully through the subtone of life, of laying down a false concept. So that, therefore, when we come now to the main tone here of life, which demands that laying down of the mortal, we naturally begin to see here the great accent on this very fact and begin to realize what is necessary to lay down the mortal. Up to this point, it was only showing always in the subtone that it necessitates the laying down of the mortal, but we never said what it really implies in a bigger way. So now with the fifth subject, we get a larger interpretation of what is meant by laying down a mortal sense of things, And it also shows that this is something that brings us these bitter experiences, and that finally we have to work through those bitter experiences until they are no more bitter. And we begin to resolve really that sacramental Eucharist step by step. So let's see what it implies that if we atone with God and if we really see that man must be one with God, what it implies when we are one with life. So we take the text again and read it together. It is a small, simple, straightforward text so that we will not have much difficulty in getting the meaning of it. She starts out that life is God. Now, when you read that, you feel at once that a completely new subject is coming up. She never started out that way. That it indicates at once, now she wants to talk about God as life and what it means to prove life. Because principle was before, that demanded proof. So what it is that we prove, principle actually proves that God is life. And this is what we can see here. So that life is God, Jesus proved. And he proved it by his reappearance after the crucifixion. He proved there that life is God, that life is eternal, that life cannot be killed. And this is the point here now. And he proved it in strict accordance with his scientific statement, which was reading, destroy this temple, destroy the body, try to kill the body, so to say, and in 3 days I, namely Spirit, will raise it up. And you can see that Jesus saw that the builder is always mind, and because mind is the builder and constructor, mind can always build up life. That life is built on the divine mind, and therefore that mind can raise it up. It is as if he had said, the I, the life substance, intelligent of the universe, is not in matter to be destroyed. Therefore, mind can raise it up. Matter cannot raise it up, but mind can do it because life is not in matter. So we have to fall back on the opposite of mind or mortal mind and see that the constructive factor in being is the divine mind. Which means for us really that we must see that life is not bodily, that life is not material, that life is caused or constructed or built up or created by mind. And as this mind is not material, there is no mixing of life with matter. And this is the very next tone. We come at once to the mixing and rejecting that life is in and of spirit, and bringing forth that life is in and of spirit. Sorry, I don't know what I said before, but I had a feeling I was saying it wrongly. What I want to say, I go over it again, I don't know what I said, I just had it in my mind, that what we see is that life is not in and of matter, that matter cannot build up or create life, that only mind is the creator, mind is the builder, and can only build up life. So that because life is never in and of matter, there is no mingling of life with matter. And that naturally is the second point, that life does not mingle with matter, and so we get to the subtone of spirit, which knows no mingling. Because what is life in matter? Life God in matter? That's the theory of pantheism, that life lives in material things. And so here we have the next paragraph that negates that. Jesus' parables explain life as never mingling with sin and death. Mingling, you know, is the counterfeit of the onlyness of spirit. Whenever a fact is believed to be mingled with its counterfeit, then it is a mingling which is solved through spirit to the onlyness of spirit. So within our consciousness, we begin to realize that life can never mingle with anything opposite, neither with mortal mind, nor with matter, nor with sin, nor with death. So he laid the axe of science at the root of material knowledge. Can you see? Of material knowledge, the counterfeit of spirit, that he might be ready to cut down the false doctrine of pantheism. As I said, pantheism is a belief that life lives in matter. Or in other words, that God or life is in or of matter. Do you hear the tone of spirit? That spirit which is the only, that cannot mingle with its opposite, that is absolutely separate from its opposite, and therefore from the point of view of life, spirit says that life is in and of spirit and not in and of matter. So we have two tones that flow into each other, which first say life builds on mind. Second, life does not mingle with matter. It is not in and of matter. Life is in and of spirit. So that whatever life brings forth, and however life then does identify itself, it must be spiritual. So at that point we come to the next subtone of soul, which now shows that we must see that we have a life that is really identified spiritually and not humanly, that we must have a mission, that we must have a life mission. You know that the mission is always soul, because soul says, I identify your life mission. So we come to life as soul, and this is very interesting here. Mrs. Eddy takes the symbolism of Jesus and the disciples that he sent out. Jesus sent for 70 students at one time, but only 11 left a desirable historical record. We know record has to do with mission, has to do with soul, namely the defined mission, the history of our life, the biography of our true life. That is our record. And so he said, Jesus sent out 70, but only 11 really left a desirable record. But it gets even worse. Tradition credits him with 200 or 300 other disciples that he sent out into all the various parts of the world, mostly really to those dispersed Jews that were living in foreign countries, that were living in Babylon or in Assyria, in Syria, in Egypt, and all over, even in India, all over the Near East. He sent them to these Jewish churches and synagogues to bring the new tidings, the new faith. And so out from these 200 or 300 other disciples who have left no name, who could not really bring the idea to the point of really identifying it as something lasting and unchanging. It was nameless. Now we know that soul names really and truly. And here we have this terrific life experience that says many are called, but few are chosen. Meaning many are called, all are called, all have access to God, but very few choose themselves to identify them with their mission. It is not just a haphazard, accidental thing that happened. It is a question of each one to us. We can say, yes, the Christian Science textbook explains itself to hundreds and hundreds of disciples. What are they doing with it? Can they really identify that science to such an extent that it makes really an impact on the world and that it is unchangeably maintained? That's a great question. Thousands and millions of people have read the textbook. Where are they? What do they do? And only a few are always left. It is really always a remnant of which the prophets were talking that are left over and that carry really the light forward. They fell away. Can you see? They fell away. They lost really their mission. Soul is that which does not lose anything. In soul, nothing is ever lost. In soul, nothing is ever touched. So they fell away from grace because they never understood their master's instruction. You see, in these few terms is a whole tragedy in religious history. Here it is depicted in Jesus' life, that he sent them out, and out of those hundreds and hundreds, only a few stayed with him. And when it came to the crucial point, even they left him, with the exception perhaps of John. So can you see the tragedy of not understanding science? They fell away not because they were bad people. They fell away from grace. They got it all through grace. They didn't have to earn their way. It was grace that sent them to Jesus. But they never truly understood their master's instruction. And this is the case when you feel that I am a teacher, then be careful that you see that I am not a teacher, because you can fall away anyway. Just to have the grace to know about science does not yet say that we can have that soul sense which really can, in a sinless way, on a spiritual understanding way, see that science. This is not obvious. It needs really that mind, spirit and soul as our principle on which to stand in order to have that spiritual understanding that can understand the teaching. Think of John Dolly. He's a wonderful example. He had, when he was teaching in the church, he had about 900 students in a class association. Where are they? The moment Boston cracked the whip, they were gone. They ran like rats. They left the boat like rats. And only a few that were greenhorns, like me at that time, really did stick to him and a few others. It also shows that to be a student of a teacher does not mean that one has understood the teacher. That's always a difficult thing to say. Mrs. Eddy says it here. These students fell away from grace because they never understood their master's instruction. So alone to go to John Dolly's class, or actually only to go to one of his summer schools, does not mean that because they listened at the feet of the great master that they understood him. There is only 1 or 2%, perhaps, if that is a lot, that began to understand what he actually was teaching. So to be just outwardly a student of somebody does not mean that you have understood him. Not at all. Do you think that all my students have understood what I was teaching? I don't think you would say yes. It takes something more than that. So We come here to the great, great lesson of life that is much deeper and much more deep felt and needs much more than a superficial sense of following a teacher and saying, well, he or the other one is my teacher. They are his teacher, but they are not the students that understood the teacher. That's something different. So that everyone really must prove what he understands first in order to show that he actually has understood it.